welcome everyone to the Sports Review here on Planet 104.6 FM, or if you listen on Planet Audio. The Sports Review is proudly brought to you by Westprint, westprint.co.nz, or if you want to give them a call for all your printing needs, 09 827 8531. Now, before I start the show, 10 years ago, 1251, the city of Christchurch was... The heart was ripped out of the city of Christchurch with what was considered as an earthquake, which we will never forget. This show goes out to this. I'm doing a big shout out to the people of Christchurch that have stayed resilient during tough times. They've had many earthquakes since then. They've had a, what would be perceived a few years ago as an horrific terror attack, but as usual, Cantabrians, and being a former Cantabrian, even though I've been in Auckland for 25 years, they've stood strong against adversity. So at 12:51, out of respect for the lives that are lost and to the people of Christchurch, we will be doing a minute silence. So I will just make sure that everyone will know for a minute we will be off here while we remember those that have lost their lives and the families of those people. I'll also just like to let you know now, AJ Wheaton, unfortunately, something's last minute has had to pull out, but he's definitely back for next week. So unfortunately, you're going to have to deal with me, so I apologise. I've tried four or five other people and couldn't get hold of them. Unfortunately, one was heading down to another part of the country. Another one was playing golf. So it has been a bit of a tough time within an hour trying to find someone. So I've actually decided to have a go and preview the Super Rugby season that starts this Friday. It's the Highlanders versus the Crusaders, and over the weekend we have the Hurricanes versus the Blues. So I'm just going to give you a breakdown of what I think is going to happen and my predictions for the Super Rugby season. I'll just get to that right now. So the big movers this year will be the Blues, the hometown franchise. The Blues have added some additional strength within their front row with Nepal Alala. Also have added Dylan Hunt from the Otago Highlanders. Now, their forward pack is probably one of the best forward packs within this competition. And you're talking about they've finally got depth. I can see that's part of their strength. Also, they have some great wingers who are dangerous, like Caleb Clark and Mark Talia. The cons, when I look at this, is there is a lack of depth in midfield. If Rika Ione or TJ Fane was to get injured, who do you replace him with? Also, I do have my doubts on Otiri Black. While he had a bit of a breakthrough season last season, he has still yet to prove himself at the top level. And so we move on to the Chiefs. Yet again, a very, very good loose trio with depth to cover all three loose forward positions. Some fantastic broken play runners such as Damian McKenzie, Sean Wainui. They're fantastic. Some of the cons, the lack of quality first 5'8", and that's not just them, it's many other franchises. They're trying to use Damian McKenzie at first 5'8", but he is more of a fullback. The front row lacks a bit of quality if there's any injury, so they do have some issues there. The Hurricanes, they've got some great outside backs, and they've also got a fantastic midfield along with a proven loose forward trio. Where I think some of their cons will be to do with lack of depth around the locking department and props. They don't seem to have a lot of quality around there. So, you know, I'm going to give you my top five at the end. So just wait a minute, guys. So the Crusaders, well, one of the pros they've got, they know how to win, experience winning Super Rugby titles, a solid type 5, a quality first 5'8", fantastic outside backs that can do anything from broken play. One of the cons they have, it's the first time I can actually say that there is a bit of lack of depth of quality in the Crusaders, such as midfielder, backup, first 5'8", and loose forward, if there were injuries. So that is some of the things that could affect the Crusaders' season. The Highlanders, well, the big pros they've got, Liam Squire is back from what I hear he's playing. He is really fired up, and they've got a great trio of loose forwards, but probably lack of quality number seven. Exciting new backs. For everyone, watch Thomas Umanga Jensen. Lee Piper has spoken to me about him, and he has said he is one to watch. Probably the cons for them, a lack of experience in crucial games could cost them, as well as depth in the front row and a quality number seven. So that's some of my thoughts. I'm going to give you my top five. I believe this will be the top five. It'll be the Crusaders, the Highlanders. I believe the Blues won't make the final. I believe the expectation will be too high. And when the Blues, when you hear the Blues, it's going to be their year, the expectation gets higher. And so I think they'll finish third. I think the Hurricanes will finish fourth, and I think the Chiefs will finish dead last. Some of the players to keep an eye on would be, have a look at from the Blues, look at Zane Sullivan. Really had a fantastic Mitre 10 Cup. Also, Caleb Tarras really looks a fantastic player, whether they play him at first 5'8 or at fullback. The Hurricanes, well, there is some really, really good quality there. The bus is back, but have a look at Billy Proctor. I think he's finally going to come into his own this season. He plays at centre. The Crusaders, watch Shea Finaki and a couple of their young midfielders. They're going to be really something to have a look at. And I've mentioned Thomas Umanga Jensen, but there are a number of young wingers that are playing for the Highlanders are actually going to be something to watch out for. Also, while we're speaking about rugby, the contribution of Dan Carter to New Zealand rugby, well, I can say one thing, he was a great. We had some great first 5'8s, and many will debate, but he was probably the greatest first 5'8 in our game. He won us that 2015 World Cup, and what a final he played. I believe in 2011, if he didn't get injured, the All Blacks would have won the World Cup by a canter and would have won it quite easily. And it's not been one-eyed bias All Blacks fan. I'm just being quite honest. I don't think we would have ever heard of the name of Stephen Donald if Dan Carter had not been injured. I believe that he's made a great contribution to the game, and I really hope that Dan Carter can give more back to the game, whether it be involved with the Blues in a coaching or a kicking role as a coach there. Let's hope he does, because I believe that he's got still so much to give, and one day I hope to have Dan Carter on the show. If I can't get a rugby analyst, you all might be laughing, how the hell I'm going to get Dan Carter? Well, where there's a will, there is a way. Well, I want to thank you people for listening to this first part of the rugby 10 minutes or 10 to 12 minutes. I apologise, it's usually good having an expert in there, and we will have one next week. AJ Wheaton's definitely on board next week, and I'm looking forward to having AJ back, as a lot of the listeners out there will be. I will say that next up we're going to have a wee chat to Rod Davis about the America's Cup, and then at 12:51, as I've said, we will observe the minute silence in remembrance of the Christchurch earthquake in 2011. I'll just play you a bit of music, and we'll get Rod Davis on the line next. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review. A quick change over there. So yesterday, the finalist in the America's Cup was found. Luna Rossa, Prada Pirelli, bet Ineos Team UK 7-1. And what I could see, I haven't seen a dominating challenger like that since Team New Zealand in 2017 and in 1992 and Lingi in 2003. But on the line, we do have an expert on this. He's America's Cup, and I don't like using the word veteran because Rod's not that old, but I will say, an experienced America's Cup skipper and Mr. Rod Davis. Good afternoon, Rod, and how are you today?
Yeah, good.
Now, I wasn't going to call you a veteran because it would make you sound out to be old, and we all know that you're not old, Rod.
Oh, yeah, old's a relative thing. If you ask the kids of today, they probably think I'm old. But anyway, you just keep charging along as best you can.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you back. And, of course, over the weekend, the Luna Rossa 7, Ineos Team UK 1. And I have to say that it was a very dominant maturation from Luna Rossa. I didn't expect that. I expected it to be a lot closer. And Luna Rossa really looked quite dangerous. Give us some of your thoughts, Rod, on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dominant performance. They did have light wins all the way through it, which would have played a little bit into Luna Rossa's hands. But in all honesty, 7-1 is a convincing score. I really kind of thought it would be more of a 7-3 type of scenario. And if before the series started, I would have not even been able to tell you who was going to be the 7, because it's interesting in the sense that the English went through the round robins and didn't lose a single race, got seeded straight into the finals. But in the finals themselves, found that really Luna Rossa has continued their improvement curve through the racing and became in a dominant position. You really can't pick a lot of fault in the way Luna Rossa sailed the series. So it'll be, you know, that begs the question of where does Team New Zealand and Luna Rossa stack up?
Well, that's a big question there, Rod. And of course, from all reports we're hearing that Team New Zealand have done a bit of modifications to their boat and apparently look really fast. Look, the crew work looks really slick. So that is going to be the interesting question. I have to say, by watching some of the series, you know, like having the two helmsmen, do you believe that could give Luna Rossa a bit of an advantage?
Yeah, I like the two helmsmen system. And the reason I like it is, it takes about 5 seconds for the helmsman to leave his helming station, switch sides, get locked into the new helming station. So there's 5 seconds that the boat's on basically autopilot until, in the case of Ben, could get in and start racing, you know, doing it again. And, you know, you do, I don't know, 8 tacks in a race, maybe 10, call it 10 tacks, that's 50 seconds of the boat on autopilot plus the 4 to 6 jives.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And all of a sudden, the boat's, you know, sailing a long way without the racing skippers steering the boats. Yeah, and, you know, where Ben got caught out on one of the starts, he went to switch sides. Actually, the start that they flared up and landed on their side a little bit, he went to switch sides early, because he needed to get up there to make a decision because of how he was going to race with Spithill, whether he was going to push or not, and got pinned by the boom and all hell broke loose. So this crossing of the boat is fraught with danger. Now, Team New Zealand goes around the front. Blair Peep goes around the front of the boat, which is a lot safer than going around the back, but it's still a five-second gap that the boat's not being sailed. So if I were designing the thing into the future, looking into the future, I'd say that most of the teams in the future will all have two helmsmen.
Yeah, and I think the biggest advantage is that you can just see in some of the crossovers, you do lose a lot of valuable time, and especially in a close race, we've seen how these boats work, Rod, and, you know, 3 or 4 seconds lost can be a lead change in a very, very close race.
Yeah, that's a real critical time right out of the pack, so... it's a nice system with the two. One of the things that Lino Rosso has demonstrated all the way through is their ability to improve with each race. They really have done a great job of learning from each race and then applying it the next day. And their learning curve through the races has been phenomenal. And You can see it in the conversation on the between Jimmy and Bruni. They're talking about the tactics. They're talking about the philosophy of the tactics. We'll take them out to the ley line here, and that puts them on the same page, whether they're steering or flying the boat. They've agreed in what the goal is, and or they've changed the goal, and that's fine. And I think that's become better and better. So there's no communication breakdown per se between them. So it's a contest of whether racing teaches you more about how to prepare for the America's Cup or testing, because Team New Zealand's in a testing and development mode, and they just don't have the ability to go racing because they're cut out of the Challenger. Yeah. So here we go. We're
going to
find out.
Yeah, that could be the advantage Luna Ross may have, but from what we're hearing, the Team New Zealand boat is very, very fast. So it is going to be quite interesting. And in a few weeks' time, we'll definitely be watching that. Now, I know it's a long way out, but do you believe this America's Cup final will be closer than a lot of people are expecting? Because what I'm hearing is people are saying Team New Zealand are going to win it 7-1, 7-0. I'm of the belief that this one could be close. What's some of your thoughts on it, Rod?
I really, at this point, don't have a great handle. I think Team New Zealand will win, and I think that it probably would be, if I had to guess, 7-2, 7-3. But honestly, that's a guess. I think Team New Zealand's quicker, and they're working, obviously, they'll be working very hard on the round starting line and stuff. They've been hammering away at that because they know that's a big deal. And it's one of Jimmy and Bruni's strengths, is the whole match racing start. So, I think Team New Zealand's going to win. I don't think it's going to go down to the last couple of races. But we just don't have enough evidence. We're just going to have to start playing the game and see how it plays out.
Yeah, the first race will give us, probably the first two races will give us that indication, Rod. Okay, Rod, I have to say thank you so much for coming on board again, as I say, and I'm looking forward to speaking to you during the America's Cup final series, and it's going to be a lot of excitement, and I'm looking forward to seeing you. You'll be on TV very soon, I believe, Rod.
Oh, yeah, they've done a little documentary or something, and I don't know. I'll have to go see what I said on TV and see if I made a fool of myself or not. We'll just have to wait and see how that plays out.
Well, coming from a man like myself, who definitely has a face for radio, from what I can see, it wasn't so bad, mate. Anyway, Rod, you have a good day, mate.
Okay, you have a good one too.
Cheers, Rod. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Rod Davis. Now, what we're going to do is that I'm going to play a bit of music at 12:51. We're just going to turn, everything's going to be dead silent. So if you can just give us a second, I'll just get some music on. Yeah. Okay, everyone, kia kaha Christchurch, be strong. And I know that this city's been strong 10 years ago. Really, the heart of the city was ripped out, but they are slowly rebuilding. And it is, usually we have a bit of banter, but Brendan, first of all, welcome to the show. And, of course, 10 years since you may have been down in Timaru, were you during that time? Oh.
I was actually I was in Christchurch that day, and only for the grace of God I'd have been in the city centre. I was supposed to have an appointment in the city centre, and I changed my mind and cancelled the meeting, and went to another one way outside of town, which was a lot safer. And I'll never forget it. When the radio was all you could hear on the radio was what was going on, and I had no contact with my family, and I didn't know whether they were alive or dead.
Yeah.
It was an absolutely terrifying day that I'll never forget, and God bless everyone.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you have a look at that city, it's pretty resilient, isn't it? You know, they've gone through many earthquakes after that. They went through that horrific terror attack at the mosque, which really, you know, but they're just a real, you know, Cantabrians, you know. They're strong people, mate. They are strong people.
And the Kiwis, and it was just a day that I never ever forget, and I was never as glad to see my family safe and well when I got home from work that day. But kia kaha.
Kia kaha. Anyway, Brendan, the CPL's looking pretty close at the moment. Apart from that, we all know that Manchester City are looking good. The top four looks absolutely like a logjam at the moment.
It is indeed. Manchester City, 18 wins on the trot.
Yeah, they're brilliant. They're too good.
They're just in a... They're like Luna Rossa yesterday. They're just in a completely different league. And but look, I was just thinking, you know, about what we're talking about in the show today. And I suppose... Can you tell me if there's a more fickle game on the planet Earth than football? You know, other sport can you go from hero to zero in a nanosecond. Look, Jurgen Klopp, after you know revitalizing, reforming, rejigging, resetting Liverpool, getting them to win the Premier League after such a long drought. In fact, they never won it, and then to win the Champions League, playing absolutely sensational football. You know, hailed as the great redeemer. Mm. Now, they have had a run of disastrous results, which has culminated in a derby defeat to their noisy neighbours, Everton.
Yeah, well.
The fans are now calling for him to be sacked.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, I saw something last week on Talk Sports Facebook page saying, we need to get this guy in. This guy's a class manager. He's just having a bad run. Jeez, I tell you what, if they want to sack him... Please, Old Trafford, open the door, bring in Jürgen to be our saviour.
Yeah. Tell him there's plenty of room at Celtic Park or Old Trafford.
Yeah. Hang on, we had a win today. We're still second.
I know, but you did indeed have a win. But, but it is, that was Everton's first win at Anfield this century.
Yeah, it is.
The first win, and it's the fourth time Liverpool have lost four games in the league in 98 years. Yeah. So, it is a run of form. But I think we should run the caveat past that. Eamon have said this season has been like no other. It's been weird, and if there's two teams in the British Isles that would miss their fans. The most, it would have to be Liverpool and it would have to be Glasgow Celtic, because those two teams really do feed off their crowds. And I'm not making specific excuses, but there is the cup and the green, it really do spur those teams on. And you know, like some of the Celtic players have said, you know, that this season has been like playing on the moon.
Yeah, but they're professionals, Brendan, and this is the situation. Just on the EPL, sorry, Brendan, what about West Ham?
I was just going through the table here, Manchester City are obviously going to win the league, and they can't, Eamon, but I think there's seven teams in with the hunt for the remaining three Champions League spots. You know, your boys, Manchester United, Leicester City, they've been hanging around like a bad smell. West Ham under David Moyes, the chosen one. Chelsea, Liverpool, Everton, Aston Villa. I think Tottenham are gone.
I think Villa may have a chance, but I also think that Everton could be the one to watch. But West Ham, now the reason I'm saying is because I get messages from good mates of mine that are one over in London, Speedy Mulvey, saying how delighted he was to beat Spurs, and they're in top four, and they reckon Jesse Lingard, since he's came there, has made a huge difference.
Absolutely. There's a part of me really sort of respect David Moyes. He was given the hospital passes of all hospital passes when he got the gig at Old Trafford. United were a team in decline. They had lost, you know, their mercurial manager of so many years, and I don't think Jesus Christ himself would have been able to do that job. And he has come back. He's been kicked and he's down, and he's actually got West Ham playing stuff reasonably nice football, and he's built some a terrific team spirit there. So yeah, fair play to him.
Now, just in case they do, and we all know West Ham fans. I like West Ham fans. They're good. You can have a bit of a laugh with them and stuff. If they do, I do have a number given to me of a certain West Ham fan in Auckland. You know, and yep. I know. We may actually get them on to debate the issues of West Ham, but we may have to close them off early. What do you think?
Oh, just make sure he leaves a Stanley knife at home.
No, I'll tell him that next time I see him at another event, which I have mentioned you to several. No. I've ran into several of your former colleagues lately, and they all congratulate me on the way that I'm just keeping how I've made you a calmer person, Brendan.
Oh, absolutely. The medication is helping as well, no doubt. But I'll tell you what, you wouldn't need too much medication yesterday if you were watching the Brexit part two of INEOS UK making their Brexit out of the America's Cup.
Oh, yeah, that was, I'll tell you something, Brendan, that Luna Rossa looks quite good.
It really, really does. Look, as I've said many times in your show, I am no yachting expert. I'm no Popeye the Sailor Man. But
you do eat a lot of spinach.
Thing is, you've got to recognise that they've got progressively better as the tournament's gone on. The two races they had against New Zealand, you know, New Zealand did clean them up in the bush race, but the second race was very close. And this guy, Jimmy Spittle, there's just something about him. I quietly like him now.
Yeah, well, who is it? You know, he's become the enigma, which, you know, you go back to the 80s and 90s where we had Dennis Connor. He's become the one of the real characters of America's Cup. And I can tell you what, he's got that true Aussie grit.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the bush race, I love the way they've got the onboard commentary. You can sort of hear them having a chat. And
look at
the crew and he goes, relax, boys, is anyone
boating
this race?
Well, I was going to say, what was it, when they're at match point, I was thinking when it looked like INEOS Team UK, I was going to say the famous words he said to us. Imagine if you lost it from here, Jimmy, but he's too good a sailor. And I think Team New Zealand have got a lot on their hands. Hey, what's happening up in Celtic at the moment, Brendan, and what's happening up in north of the border in the Scottish Premier League?
I was hoping that we could have segued into the yachting, Eamon, without you having to bring this very, very... like, I'm emotionally scarred and wounded by what's going on in Scotland.
I've just seen the result, you are.
I was trying to... I was I was trying to do a sort of a Jack Hare down the wing and just sort of sidestep you away from Scottish football and mentioning it. Look, it's a complete and utter disaster. I've been on the Celtic fan website and there's just people are just saying that their souls are destroyed and. It's just terrible. Rangers are winning in an absolute canter, even more of a canter than Manchester City in the Premier League. Celtic have basically imploded. It'll just have to be a reset next year. We have bought poorly in the market. We've made some very, very bad decisions in relation to going to Dubai and catching COVID. COVID hasn't been good. The players have missed the crowds. It's been an unmitigated disaster. Neil Lennon has allegedly been turning up to training drunk. It's just an absolute and unmitigated shambles. It's soul destroying for us Celtic fans. But the thing is, we've got a new chief executive starting. There's apparently plenty of money in the kitty to get into the transfer market in the summer. We get a new manager. There's all sorts of rumours of who that new manager may be. You know, the likes of Eddie Howe, Rafa Benitez has all been banded around. So hopefully it's a high profile manager.
Yep.
And we can get back to score one and start giving Rangers a bit of a tickle up again.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing. You're the rugby expert on this particular.
Well, what's today? Because none of my rugby experts were available, so everyone had to listen to me. I probably lost the audience within the first 2 minutes. But yeah, go ahead. Are we talking about these silly rules?
Well, look. Here's the thing, here's my problem. The most popular game on the planet is football. And football is a very simple game. Football hasn't basically changed its rules since its inception. The only real rule of any note that's changed really has been the passing back to the goalkeeper. The thing is, that's what makes football so internationally palatable and watchable is that anybody, whether you're in Timbuktu or Timaru or Times Square, you can understand the game. Rugby, every year the rules change and it gets more and more complicated, and I've only got a small brain.
Brendan, I'd never say that about you. just on those rules. Now, as soon as they came out, the goal line kick out, the captain's referral, I just said, why don't we just take off two players, have no line outs, have no contested scrums, and call it rugby league? A lot of generation like me, we're turning, you know, I know there'll be several good people who are around in New Zealand rugby. Like, could you imagine Sir Colin Meath? You've met him, I've met him. He'd be turning in his grave.
Here's my take on it. Before you get into the new rules, because that's why I wanted to run them past you, because I think basically they're turning it into rugby league. But before that, it was too complicated before that.
I know.
Because the offside rule, I don't know when anybody's offside anymore. And I don't know how you enter a ruck. I don't know how you upset the ref. All I do, I don't watch the game anymore. I just watch which way the referee's pointing his arm.
It's become frustrating. I think the referees have too much to say in the game, Brendan. I do agree with you, because it's like I speak to a lot of people involved in rugby. And it's just that, why do we need to do it? And do you know why I think these rules were brought in? Tell you why. Because Sky TV are paying the bills. They're paying for the rugby contract. Do you know what they're saying? We want to have this, this and this to make their game look entertaining for TV purposes.
Well, that's the only thing that I can think. That's the only thing that I can think, because otherwise, I don't even think they're trying to make it into rugby league. I think they're trying to make it into basketball. I genuinely don't know, because the thing is that I used to love rugby in the 70s and the 80s when it was just an old-fashioned 6-3. When you had the likes of Moss King knocking the block off, Billy Bush and stuff like that. And, rugby's a game that doesn't need to be sanitised, pasteurised, and I don't know what they're trying to do to it, but they're putting me right off it.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm going to have a look, and I'm looking forward to seeing how the Super Rugby Aotearoa goes. Between me and you, a few weeks ago I had Ken Laban on the show, and of course Ken actually said to me, he said he'd prefer maybe a one round Super Rugby and a two round NPC. I think that would be more value to our game.
Yeah, well, I really don't know, but what I do know is that when I was watching provincial rugby here in the 80s, and you got the likes of Canterbury and Wellington and Auckland, yeah. And you know, even the Manawatu, and you know, all sorts of people being really competitive. There was big crowds, there was big interest. This is all before Sky TV, now. And people were really, really interested in the game. Now there's a diversification right across the country. I think rugby's got some significant, you know, real problems here, and it could actually end up like the horse racing industry. If it doesn't be careful, it's going to lose the punters.
It possibly could lose. I don't think it will, but I think they've got to really seriously have a real good look at themselves. Now, I tell you what, I've got to move on now, Brendan.
No problem.
But Brendan, it was great having that chat, and you know, on a day like this when, you know, we can debate sports, and I think we should all just, you know, tap your desk or tap wherever you are and just say how lucky we are to be alive today.
You're absolutely right, Eamon, and I'll catch you next week, and we'll put the waters to right again next week.
Oh, Brendan, I tell you what, mate, they're listening in everywhere. In Timbuktu, mate, the Brendan McNeice fan club is going gangbusters.
Top of the pops.
Okay, thank you very much, Brendan. Great speaking to you today, man.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
That was Brendan McNeice, and I tell you what, he is one of the most entertaining men we have on this radio. You don't have to agree with him, but he gives us a different perspective. So next up, we're going to have the panel. We've got a few things to discuss, a bit of cricket, a bit of Helbergs, maybe a bit on the boxing as well as remembering where we were 10 years ago. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review, proudly sponsored by Westprint. Email them on westprint.co.nz. I'll tell you what, fantastic printers for any of your invitations, any displays. Please give them an email. I know that Phil and Martin and the team are more than willing to help you out. Well, I'd like to welcome to the show, first of all, I'd like to welcome on the Hopeless Romantic. That is Mark Watson. Good afternoon, Mark.
afternoon to you, Amon.
Good. And the Silver Tongue, Silver Fox, Sean Summerfield, how are you?
G'day, guys. How you doing?
Hey, before I start, 10 years ago, probably I remember where I was at work around 1 o'clock when somebody had told me that there'd been a major earthquake in Christchurch, and, you know, I looked at a force field, oh, they've had a few, but then we didn't, and it wasn't until a bit later I saw, you know, what can happen under a powerful earthquake in the devastations, and I know where I was that day, guys. So, just on that, special shout out to Christchurch.
I remember being in the newsroom at 12:51, and obviously, as you know, it's both of our hometown. I was there on September 4th when the first one happened, and actually went down to help out with the coverage. 2 days after the quake, had some friends who really caught up in it, and it's crazy that it's 10 years ago. I could go on and about it, but I mean, heck, I wasn't there when it happened, and I just feel for the people that lost people at the time and those that are continuing to struggle. But as we know, mate, if anyone can get through this kind of thing and keep on going, it's the Cantabs, isn't it?
Absolutely, Sean. Absolutely, very resilient people.
Yeah, I was, it's funny, I called one of the last major sporting events on QEH Stadium, actually, which was the World Para Track and Field Championships, which actually, ironically, had Oscar Pistorius competing in it, and I was doing that with John McBeth, and, you know, and then to sort of go back down there after the devastation and see the mighty QEH Stadium where we saw Dick Taylor, 974 games just completely gone, was just really, really bizarre. And I actually remember also working, I think it was Radio Sport on Boxing Day, prior to that earthquake, and getting a really good rattle at one of the studio in the old building down there. And maybe that was a little bit of just one of those sort of tremors that you get sort of in the lead up to the big earthquake. So, look, certainly, thoughts go out to the people of Christchurch. You know, my in-laws live down there, so I do travel down there regularly.
Yeah, funny, you're talking about Kent House there. I thought that building was rock solid. It just shows you what it went through. My God.
Yeah. Anyway, I do remember that Boxing Day. I was actually at Christchurch Airport heading off home. I was down there for Christmas, and I heard so much about the earthquakes, and I was, you know, a bit cynical. And then when that hit, I went, "Whoa, these poor people are going through hell." Anyway, we better move on with the show. And what I did send you your homework to have a look at last night, but I'm going to start off, before we start off on about the cricket, and I'll change things up a bit. We've got the Halbergs Decades Awards. Now, they were supposed to be held last Thursday, but the date has been changed. I just want to grab some of your thoughts on this because, you know, I look at this and I know who my winners are, especially when it comes to the teams, but I also know who they're going to give it to. Like, for the teams, I would say it's Bond and Murray because they have been the most dominant team in their sports forever. But, you know, they're going to give it to the All Blacks. You know that it probably should be Lisa Carrington, and she should get the Women's Award. The Men's Award should go to Marty Drysdale, but they'll find someone else, etc., etc. So I just want to grab your guys' thoughts on that.
Oh, I think you summed it up quite nicely, Eamon. I completely agree with you. It's always funny, eh? We tend to sort of get caught up always, I think, with the Albert Gods too often in a popularity contest. Firstly, yeah. I think we should have just had a Worlds for what happened last year, and I think clearly Scott Dixon and Motorsport probably would have dominated those awards. Okay, sport did take place. It wasn't maybe at the same extent as we've had previous years, but those that did achieve shouldn't be punished for it. We should have just, you know, under the circumstances, done well. Is it any different than an athlete, let's just say, for example, and it's not the case, but let's say an athlete goes and wins the Hawaiian Ironman in the year of the Olympics. Well, are they going to win it? No, they're not, because an Olympic gold medal is probably going to override it. But, you know, you still hold the awards, and that's the reality of it. So I struggle with the fact that we actually haven't got awards. The athlete of the decade, I mean, I'm very much along the lines of probably Lisa Carrington, you know, Amahe Drysdale, two-time Olympic champion as well. And they are tough sports, you know. You know, I think you do actually have to break some of these sports down. Like, I'm going to argue that what a rower goes through, what a kayaker goes through, is going to be 10 times harder than what a rugby player goes through in terms of training, insecurity. They don't get the financial resource. You're there 2 sessions a day, 6-7 days a week, and a sport that's just absolutely brutal. You know, you can't hide if you're having a bit of a bad day. I've always I've always struggled a little bit with the Hellberg Awards, to be honest. I think if you're a judge, you should only be honoured if you're prepared to do genuine due diligence on every athlete and every event.
Well, it's a bit like, you're trying to compare a comedy to a dramatic to a documentary, and that sort of thing. I actually did some counting after I got the homework email, guys, just looking at Supreme Awards. And if I've got the count wrong, 16 athletics, 14 for, I called it all sports. I hope that's all right.
Yeah.
Cricket somehow taken Supreme 5 times. Rugby's taken Supreme 6 times. And then golf 4, sailing 4, yachting 4. Multi-sport 1 for Supreme. It was interesting, guys. Athletics, men twice, women 10 times. So it's just looking at that. But team of the year, all sports 11 times, rugby 9 times.
Yeah.
So it's just, looking at the... It's actually not a big... For a country that loves sport, it's not a big spread. What I looked at, I can't believe all the years growing up, that softball was never considered. Yet, I don't think rugby back then was any wider a sport than softball. I may be wrong. I know it's not baseball, but it's really interesting. Is it popular? How do they decide what's better?
Well, no, I think there's a prejudice towards blue-collar sports, to be honest. So I don't think Kiwi Rugby League at times has been recognised on the odd occasion. It's had its moment as well. Look, athletics, I think, sport was very, very narrow in the 50s and 60s, and generally, athletics and stuff did do very well. But as we've sort of moved more into the 90s and sport has diversified and our definition of sport is much broader, have we moved with the times? Do we still have our eyes open? Do we still, turn our nose up at sports like mixed martial arts in recent times had a little bit more recognition? But, no, I agree. I mean, softball and some of these sports over the years, I think, played big. But also think, too, some awards these days, I'll argue, and I'm not going to go into it, don't want to get into it because I'll upset some people, but I also think there's no
go on.
Sean.
The whole political correctness thing has taken over, too, and it does, a bit more gender balance, and let's make sure that, we're representative of the wider community and all that crap. And I'm like, just give it to the best athlete. Yeah. And look, I even go on about Valerie Adams. Yeah, it's a great achievement what she's done, but by the years, how many people throw a rock on a Sunday morning?
Hey, just you mentioned Israel Adesanya, right? So how many fights did he really have to do at the top level to win that? Was it just the one, or was there a couple in the year?
Israel Adesanya?
Yeah.
I think it was about 3 or 4.
Right, okay. So the reason I'm asking that is that, it's not like they had to win a whole tournament and play a whole lot of people. So, and I'm just trying to work out what certain people did to win things. And that's what I'm talking about, thinking about rugby league. If the Kiwis only really have to, say England or Great Britain and Australia to win a league World Cup, for example, that's monumental because beating Australia is as good as it gets. So, but it's interesting how they measure the value of these things.
But I think in the case of the mixed martial arts, you've got to be good enough to get your way up into the rankings through the domestic and international level. And then what they actually do is, they try and put the best against the very best. So it's not sort of, you think about how many people do that sport globally, and they sort of suggest number 3 fighter in the world, and you've got to take on the number 1. I mean, and the consequences, if you get it wrong, are pretty serious. But, I've always struggled with netball and stuff because, yes, it's important to us, but is it a truly global sport? Not even remotely close, but... When they do well, it's sort of like, I'll say it, but, the left jump up and down, and it's got to be given to them.
Yep, it certainly does. Just on the next subject, cricket. Do any of us really care about New Zealand, the Black Caps playing Australia C? Even though I think it's a very good Australian side.
The fact that they started to have different teams for different bloody forms of the game, it's arrogant. It's sort of arrogance the All Blacks have showed at different times.
Yes.
And I don't accept that in sport. To me, sport's about the best possible team.
Mm. Well, it's come back to bite the All Blacks, and it's also diminished their brand by the way they've given All Black jerseys away in recent times, haven't they? But look, it's good entertainment. I think you sit down, a little bit of gratification for, a couple of hours, but I don't think, you're not going to have street parades we win a couple of T20 games, are we? I mean, it's a pretty fickle form of the game. Any time that you shorten anything up, you know, the odds become a little bit more closer to 50-50 in terms of two sides playing each other. Good luck to them, mate. I'll be honest, I haven't got Spark, so I probably won't be watching it.
It's on TV1, Mark.
Okay, well, I can't sit through adverts on TV, so I won't be watching that either.
I don't know, you've got me on that, Mark. Okay, so anyway, so that was Mark's click on the cricket. I'll have a look at it. I think it's probably the big thing that I'm going to be looking at is going to see the lights at Hagley Oval, just to see how they go, and probably a big moment. There'll probably be a lot of people there, but it isn't really a top Australian side, so we'll probably get to more serious business. We've got the Junior Farr Joseph Parker fight. Now, I've been following a bit of this, so I've been trying to get experts. I'm going to give you my analysis on this, guys, and you can, a few of you can give us your thoughts. Both of you can give me your thoughts on this, but really feel Joseph Parker needs to get a good knockout win, because a loss could see him at the, really, and I like Joseph, great mate of mine, but he could be at the crossroads of his career. A loss to Junior Farr can rebuild himself again, but a loss for Joseph could be a step back if he's potentially looking to challenge for a world title in the next year or two. Your thoughts,
yeah,
guys?
Look, I think he needs to convince us, doesn't he, that he's the real deal, and I think up to this point he hasn't really shown that. In recent times, in a long time, he seems a little bit, you know, he's good, but he's just not quite there. And he needs to go out there and make a statement and move on and really sort of step up. So I agree with you 100%.
Sean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, look, I'm with
you. Have you fallen asleep or something?
Stuff, and I just find it all draining. Oh, Kevin's taking the gloves home. The judges can't come from Christchurch. And I just find it draining, and all the journos that buy into all this stuff, and it's like, God almighty, just get ready for the fight and fight. And that's the only thing about boxing that gets me. I appreciate the athleticism, but it's amazing that it's the two guys beating the crap out of each other that seem to be the least part of the show and probably making the money out of the whole thing. And so I shut my ear, blocked my ears leading up to the fight.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole newspaper game, I think we discussed it a few weeks ago, it's just become appalling. Everything's just a tabloid now. Everything's a salacious headline. Everything's about based on data. We got a few clicks on a few shark stories. Let's try and create a few more, even if they're 2 months ago. And let's just try and draw people in. And, you know, I think at the risk of their own credibility, I think the media have got a lot to answer for. Hey, look, I just wanted to bring up one thing because I didn't get a chance last week, but I was lucky enough to do the New Zealand Road Cycling Nationals last Sunday. And I just want to comment on the performance of George Bennett winning that race.
Yeah.
It was without doubt one of the great individual performances, arguably, in the history of that event. And there were a lot of former cyclists like Stephen Cox, Jack Swart there, who said the same. But he came up against Black Spoke team, who are a New Zealand sort of trade team who race sort of on the continental tour. They had 14 riders, and you know, George Bennett had himself and young Finn Fisher Black, and early on in the race they divided the peloton. Black Spoke, they sent a group of riders up the road by 4 minutes with a couple of guys in there who were capable of winning. George was sort of left at the back, and he had to bridge the gap, and so dragged Aaron Gate, Black Spoke's number one rider, across with him, and you know, he had to do nothing. And then from there, just George Bennett, I mean, he was getting bullied and then he became the bully, and he won that race by how he won it is beyond me. I think it was just the X factor in the finish. So, you know, look out for George Bennett. I worked with Greg Henderson, and he thinks that this guy will get himself on the podium at a Grand Tour, and, you know, hopefully go ahead and we see him in that road race, because, mate, he is, without doubt, like Stephen Adams. You can't actually put in context just how good an athlete this is, because you can't necessarily measure it over just one day. Chris Wood as well in football.
Hey, just back to the cycling thing, and just because, I mean, I've done a little bit sort of coast-to-coast stuff and that. I'd never really experienced a massive peloton on that. But can you maybe explain how hard it is to do what he did without having the help?
What you've got is in a peloton, you've got the riders at the front who pull the riders at the back. So if you've got a team of five or six, they can set the tempo. And if you've got, say, 14 riders or 6 riders against 2 and you've got 3 guys who are good enough to win it, they can send one rider up the road. George Bennett then has to cover him, because if he doesn't, that rider potentially could win it. So George goes up the road to try and chase him down, burns a lot of matches in doing so, a lot of energy. It all comes back together. They send the next rider back up the road who's been sitting in the bunch, and George then is forced to chase him down. George catches. And then what do? Send another rider back up the road, and they just hit him. But also, too, they can send guys up early, get 6 or 7 guys working really hard, send a group up the road with one of their very good riders, and then sort of also contribute nothing in the back where George might be stuck and Bennett's forced to do everything. So, yeah, you can control a lot by having a really, really good team. You can set a tempo on the peloton so nobody can go up the road because it's just simply too hard on the front. And so, like, even if you've got 3 riders in a break and there are 2 riders from one team and 1 from another, 2 is always going to beat 1. So for George Bennett to get past 14 riders is simply remarkable.
Just on that, Mark, time permitting, George Bennett he's made a lot of statements on the Tour de France, the Tour d'Italia. I believe he won the US Tour as well too. So
Tour of California.
Yeah, Tour of California, which I believe is a major. But this guy's extraordinary, and people don't realise, you know, this guy, his team that picks him for the Tour de France, he's an important part of that team. He's the guy that gets their number one rider up there for the yellow jersey.
Well, I mean, he rides for Jumbo-Visma, which is a Dutch team, but they are arguably now the biggest and strongest and most successful trade team in the world. And George will be their number one rider for the Giro d'Italia, their 3 Grand Tours a year. And if he's in the Tour de France, he probably sits there as about the 3rd guy in their team, but he is the last guy that they will put on the front before they launch the yellow jersey riders up the big climbs. He's a top 5 climbers in the world, and I think he's ranked 26th in the world, but that doesn't mean too much. Yeah. And, you know, a young man out of Nelson who at 17 was inspired to ride a bike by watching the Tour de France, and, you know, he had a lot of riders who sort of said, hey, we can ride in Europe now. George Bennett saying we can actually win in Europe. And, look, you can watch it on YouTube, but it is just one of the most fascinating races to watch, the way he just takes these guys down. And, you know, talking to Scott Guyton, former Olympian, who heads up this Black Spoke racing team, he said, look, at the end of the day, we did everything right. It was just the X factor.
Just on that, guys, so we've just got a minute to go. I'm just going to wrap up the show. I just want to thank both of you for your contribution today. And
I thought you were going to say, speaking of X Factor, Mark and Sean.
Yeah, well, you guys are the X Factor. You definitely are the X Factor. I can definitely say that. You know, we've got it's kind of like I suppose we're the three amigos at the moment. You've got the man, the big guy in the studio, the calm amigo, and the creative amigo, and that's you, Mark.
Oh, I'm just George Bennett, mate. I'm just that quiet achiever in the background, mate.
Neil Martin, short, Eamon.
I'm definitely short on that. And Mark, for the years that I've known you, you've never been a quiet achiever. Hey, guys, have a great day, and we'll see you next week.
Cheers.
Bye. Well, that was a great part to end the show. Everyone have a great day, and we'll see you next